dishes using environmentally friendly cleaning products. CNA Cleaning also offers ultrasonic blind cleaning. For more information and for employment opportunities, call CNA Cleaning at 514-7738.
Last week on Ecotopia, we had an excellent interview with Teresa O'Connor and Mary Kay Benson about providing housing for all. As a follow-up, today's program features an interview with Caitlin Patterson, Amber Benedict, and Bob Trausch about programs of the Chico Housing Action Team and the Everhart Village Tiny Home Project. This is a replay of an interview I did last week. I was substituting for Sue Hildebrand on The Real Issue. She set up the guests. All I had to do was show up and ask the questions.
And this is a long interview, so we'll just plunge in.
After more than 2 years and countless hours of planning, creating site designs, applying for permits, responding to permitting questions, arranging for contractors, and so on and on and on, the Chico Housing Action Team, or CHAT, announced that the Everhart Village groundbreaking will take place on Wednesday, July 13th at the Everhart Village site. The project is a partnership with the Butte County Behavioral Health. It will focus on the most seriously mental ill members of our community. Along the way, CHAT has reached out to neighbors to ensure that Everhart Village is supported by the neighborhoods surrounding the tiny house village. One of the many community forums organized by CHAT will take place on Thursday, July 14th, 6 to 7 p.m. via Zoom. So tonight we will talk with the designer and project manager of Everhart Village and with the program manager. So, with us are Caitlin Patterson, she's the program manager, and Amber Benedict, who is the project manager at Everhart. Do I have all those titles correct for you?
No, I'm now the social service director of CHAT.
Okay, that was Amber's voice, and Caitlin, let us hear your voice. Just say hello to our
audience. Hello, happy to be here.
Okay, great. I know a little bit about Amber. She holds a master's degree in social work. She designed Everhart Village around the idea of the services needed to assist the most seriously mental ill members of Chico. And give us a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. I also hold my master's degree in social work. Amber and I did that together at Chico State here. And so I have a little bit of background working with the unhoused population at the Torres Shelter, as well as the local home share program, Home and Heart.
Okay.
As well as some crisis intervention background.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, give us an overview, maybe the vision of Everhart. I also want you to review the long and troubled history, the community resistance to having this in somebody's backyard. But what's the vision for Everhart? And tell us where it's located. I think not everybody is aware of that.
So Everhart Village will be located very close to the DMV, as well as where Butte County Behavioral Health's buildings currently are. So off of Cohasset Road, there is a little alleyway, basically, that you would go down, and in located down towards the end of this alleyway will be where Everhart Village is.
Okay. So how many people will be, give us a description of the tiny houses, how many of them are there, what do they look like?
So we will have 20 tiny sleeping cabins within the village, and each one will hold, it will have a bed, it will have a table, it will have a bathroom area, it will have a little kitchenette that is back there. So the villagers, once they come into Everhart Village, they will kind of be set up to be self-sustaining within their little cabins.
And what's the period of time people can stay there, or is this permanent housing?
This is not meant to be permanent housing. This is meant to be kind of emergency shelter with a long-term stay. So we're partnering up with Behavior Health. All of the residents, or all the villagers that will come in, are going to be clients of Behavior Health, and they will be the ones that bring in the individuals that we will put into the sleeping cabin. So they're, all the referrals will come directly through Behavior Health.
And how does the selection process differ from what's going on with the pallet shelters? Are you in communication? Are these some of the same folks? Or
Not really. So these are the individuals that are on the street. They're a little harder to reach than even the individuals that are going into the pallet shelter. Mm-hmm. So the pallet shelter, you know, they're going around town. They're picking people up that are in different waterways and moving them into the shelters. These are meant to be clients of Behavior Health. So Behavior Health has created a street outreach team that goes out and it kind of finds those individuals that are really hard to reach. So we're talking about people that could currently be in some kind of psychosis or serious depression mm-hmm. and really just cannot get they're able to get their general needs met, but at a very, very basic level. Mm-hmm. So what this will do is take those individuals off of the streets. And these are the ones that you kind of see going into the hospital often or ending up in the jail from time to time. And kind of this rotating door of hospital, jail, on streets. Mm-hmm. And so our goal is to take them out of that cycle, place them in Everhart Village, and really create an environment where they can start to heal and gain what they need to get from the program so that they can move in sustainable housing.
Mm-hmm. What kind of programs would that consist of? Obviously differ widely.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Caitlin?
Yeah, it's going to be very individually based, right? And so our villagers will be attending weekly classes that are meant to help build life skills as well as social skills in order to maintain that stabilization mm-hmm. and eventually be able to move into permanent stable housing.
Tell me a little more. Life skills, meaning?
Right. So that can mean a variety of things, including budgeting, as well as maybe interviewing. And if they're looking for employment, we can provide classes for that, as well as just like writing and group therapy classes, because a lot of these individuals, all of them will be experiencing serious mental illness. Mm-hmm. And so really focusing on that as well, in order to maintain that stabilization.
And we realize that this population might not be able to move into, say, their own house. So they're going to be in roommate situations, which is a lot of what CHAT does already, is we take individuals and we put them in roommate situations. And so we've learned that it takes certain skills to get along with other people. It takes certain skills just to be able to maintain your own housing. So being able to work with individuals on what does it look like to go to the grocery store mm-hmm. and put together a meal plan on a very tight budget? What does it look like to clean up after yourself enough to live with roommates and not constantly create that chaos that might come into housing? So I've been in situations where I've been housed with other people where I hated it when somebody wouldn't do the dishes. And so kind of teaching those life skills of this is what it looks like to be a good roommate is part of our goal.
Clean out the sink drain.
Yes. Put your towel back on the towel rack. Okay. Those kinds of things. Yeah. So
what else have you? This is, you're working with the Butte County Department of Behavioral Health. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about that partnership, how it works, what service they're supplying, and what CHAT is supplying.
Mm-hmm. So Everhart Village is really going to be a division of labor between those two agencies. So CHAT is going to focus on getting people housed. From day one, when somebody comes into the village, we're going to be saying, hey, do you have your paperwork in place? Do you have a driver's license? Do you have a birth certificate? What else does it take to get in? What else do you need to apply for housing kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that they're working on that and that we're doing applications moving forward to get them into their own permanent housing, because that's the ultimate goal, is to move everybody into housing. We believe at CHAT and Everhart Village that everybody deserves housing. And deserve, I don't like the word because that means somebody that doesn't deserve it, but everybody... Everybody should have housing.
It's a human right?
Yes. Yeah. And Behavior Health is really going to focus on the mental health aspect mm-hmm. of these individuals. So they're going to be coming in with clinicians. There's some doctors coming on board with their new REST program that they just got a lot of funding for, that they are currently working on putting together, that's going to go hand in hand with what Everhart Village is doing. So they're going to have case managers in there working with the individuals and really setting up a plan for their mental wellness.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a meeting place on site?
Or
you go elsewhere for
So the goal is really, especially at the beginning, is for any case managers, whether it's coming from behavior health or another agency within the community, to be able to come into the village itself and meet kind of people where they're at, get them comfortable with working with individuals. So we do have a really cool community building that's being placed within the village. Not only will it allow us to have kind of a hangout spot for people, but it will also have a computer lab, and it will have offices there for individuals to be able to meet with their case managers from other agencies.
And where can you find housing for these folks? We have a dire shortage.
That's a good question.
Very good question. We're going to work really hard on getting them into some of these new apartment buildings that are coming up around town that are meant for low-income housing, as well as some of them will probably graduate into some of the other CHAT programs.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the groundbreaking. It's scheduled for next Wednesday.
Yes. Super excited about that. This has been a long road and a big learning process for CHAT in general. We are not program developers, but we have definitely learned a lot about that process in this. So we are going to have our groundbreaking at 10 a.m. on the 13th. This is not a community event. We will be live streaming it both on our Facebook page and our Instagram for anyone in the community that would like to see this. We anticipate the news stations being there, so it will be also available on your local news stations. But this is meant to be kind of some of those key stakeholders that have played a major part in Everhart Village to come together and celebrate the fact that we have got to a point where we are moving forward with the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. By groundbreaking, you're not, this is not the shovels. You've got the houses on.
No, this is the shovels.
We got the shovels.
Yep, we got the shovels.
One of the houses we're seeing in the photo on the website of
So we actually do have the majority of our little sleeping cabins set up, as well as the community building. They're at different locations. So right now, Santos has allowed us to put the little sleeping cabins on there, and that's where a lot of the building inside of it is happening. So your drywall is going up, your all that's going up, and then they will be moved and placed on the site for Everhart Village once the infrastructure for that is laid. So what we're talking about right now is bringing in the sewer and water, electrical, all into Everhart Village, getting that all prepped. And then once that is ready to go, then we just need to move our little sleeping cabins into the village. And we'll be ready.
Are there models around the country for this particular kind of village?
Not completely. So this was kind of a collaboration of looking at other tiny house villages and seeing what they were doing, as well as looking at emergency shelter places to see what they were doing, particularly low barrier ones, because Everhart Village is meant to be a low barrier, meaning the individual, we're going to meet them where they're at and whatever that looks like for them. As well as supportive housing models created by behavior health. So we took those three, kind of smushed them together, and came up with what the design of this program will be.
Well, and CHAT is remarkable in its foresight and thoughtfulness about these kinds of issues. People travel to this country and see, if not models, other places that are taking kind of action. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you to just blue sky a little bit. What do you see as longer range potential? Could there be more tiny villages, different kinds of villages?
We're hopeful. I'm not so sure within the community, but we are hopeful that this model can be used within other communities. We're hoping that other counties will reach out and say, hey, especially, you know, in a couple of months down the road, and they see the success happening within the village, that they will reach out and say, hey, we want to take a look at your model.
Yeah.
What is it that you guys are doing?
What else would you like to say to our audience before we take a break and then bring in Bob Trout?
Yeah. that we're just really excited about this project moving forward. We are so grateful to have a community that has come together over this project. It's been amazing to see how, even though there's been so much division in our community over where this population should go, Everhart Village, we just haven't seen the same. Mm-hmm. So we get the support of City Council and from the Board of Supervisors and from the police and from just local community members in general have all just come together to make this project happen. And we're really grateful for that.
Absolutely. And if any community members have any further questions or concerns, we'll be holding a community forum next Thursday. Mm-hmm. Right, on the 14th of July at 6 o'clock. I believe you can go to our website and you can click to register for that Zoom link in order to. It is on Zoom. It is online. Correct.
I want to thank you very much for being here to chat with us about the Everhart Village.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also wanted us to remember briefly Dan Everhart, after whom it is mentioned. He was instrumental in the early days of chat. With great sadness that we lost. Dan, wish he were around to see the completion of this project, but it was his stern dedication. I had many conversations with Dan at the Peace Center, other places, and watched his. He was a very gentle person, but his dander would really get up when he was talking about how the homeless, the houseless were being treated in this community. So my guests have been Amber Benedict and Caitlin Patterson. They're with the Everhart Village here in Chico, having groundbreaking this Wednesday in a Zoom conference. Tell us the website again, just so people can, if they have pens and paper, which they seldom do, tell them how they can find that website.
Yes, so ChicoHousingActionTeam.net.
Okay, great. Thank you both for being with us on The Real Issue tonight.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio, based in Chico, California. My name is Stephen Schutte. I'm sitting in tonight for Sue Hildebrand. We've been talking about the tiny house village being designed specifically for people with serious mental illnesses. Everhart Village will hold its groundbreaking next Wednesday. And they will host a community forum on Thursday, 6 p.m. via Zoom. We suggest it again. Get that Zoom link and participate. You can learn a lot more on Thursday night. Caitlin and Amber are still in the studio with us, but we're being joined now with Bob Trausch, who has done an incredible amount for our community over the years. And he always gets embarrassed with it, but he's one of my personal, I would say, role model, except I don't do what you do, but I certainly...
We all do what we feel the call to do.
Let's start with a little bit with chat, and then we'll talk about chat, what you're doing there, and then link it up with the Everhart Village.
Well, just a little background on chat. I really didn't hear what you guys all were talking about. I probably should have listened so I don't repeat or make a mistake. Chat is... It started in 2008. I mean, 2013, really, as far as our housing program. We started way before that, obviously, with Safe Space. And that was interesting because our goal always was to house people. But we couldn't really make that happen. We knew we needed to create a name and some, something in the community that said, hey, these guys are doing something. So we started Safe Space, where we went to churches and had people at least out off the street during the wintertime, a certain number of people. I guess the most we had is maybe 70 a night, and as we know how many are out there. But those 70 at night at least had a place to stay, so it was really important. We learned a couple of things from that. One, we learned that a lot of people do have some income, but they can't get in to housing because housing is so expensive, and not just our community, many communities. And so we were encouraged by that. Also, we met a lot of people that really wanted to change their life, and we realized staying through 3 months in the wintertime is really nice, but is pretty big, but you're still homeless during the day. You're still homeless afterwards. So how much does it change your life? It may have saved your life during that period of time, but it really hasn't changed your life that much. So we started our housing program. with chat, and that was really exciting because we see people stable. We see people that are actually have an opportunity. We've had people get a master's degree in our program. People get somebody working for a PhD right now in our program. Lots of bachelor's degrees. So we've seen the success of having somebody house, how that changes. You know, I read early this morning in the newspaper that federal government just changed some rules on people who lose their children. They get charged as much as $600 a month for their children to be placed somewhere. Yeah. Well, that guarantees that they'll be in poverty and in debt for the rest of their life and never get their children back, which is the goal government claims. So that has just been changed for state by state. They can make the determination. The point is, when you get housed, it can change your life and it can put you on a track. We just had a family of three that was actually on this radio station. A couple of times, maybe three times that I've had them on this radio station with a young man talking about what it felt like to be an 11-year-old, 12-year-old, 13-year-old going to school and not wanting anyone to know that you're living in a tent someplace and how that has changed. And that young man is just now going to college. So we've known him for quite a while. And it took a time. It took, you know, some years for them to stabilize because of the trauma that they'd had in their life. The point is, we give people that opportunity in chat in many different ways because we have many different programs, and you can certainly talk about all those programs because they're always changing, always growing. The goal always of chat has been when you have a problem in a community, rather than talking about it, we look for a solution, and we've been really successful at looking for solutions. And so we now have many programs, I think, that these guys can talk about that target different groups of people in our community and give them an opportunity to get inside and be successful. Then that's our whole goal. And we have surrounded them with people like you have sitting right here and many others. I think 28, 29, how many now?
I think we're at 29.
29 mm-hmm. people, many of them with master's degrees, social services, and a incredible group of volunteers from doctors to attorneys to retired professors that volunteer in our program because they see the merits of it. But I think that it would be great if you could talk about some of the programs because we seem to stabilize because of the trauma that they'd had in their life. The point is, we give people that opportunity in chat in many different ways because we have many different programs, and you can certainly talk about all those programs because they're always changing, always growing. The goal always of chat has been when you have a problem in a community, rather than talking about it, we look for a solution. And we've been really successful at looking for solutions. And so we now have many programs, I think, that these guys can talk about that target different groups of people in our community and give them an opportunity to get inside and be successful. Then that's our whole goal. And we have surrounded them with people like you have sitting right here and many others. I think 28, 29, how many now?
I think we're at 29.
29 mm-hmm. people, many of them with master's degrees, social services, and a incredible group of volunteers from doctors to attorneys to retired professors that volunteer in our program because they see the merits of it. But I think that it would be great if you could talk about some of the programs because we saw a problem and we look for a solution for that problem. And so we have many different programs targeted to different populations.
You may be ready to talk about it. I would like to hear initially, what was the initial formula to get people housed? You started renting houses?
We started renting houses. We master leased them because we didn't have the money at that point. They're just some volunteers. We started master leasing houses, telling landlords, hey, we'll take care of the place. We'll do maintenance on it. We'll guarantee the money. We'll get it 15 days early, your payment. And we'll make sure that everything is okay, even to the point at that point, if something happens, we'll actually pay for the eviction. So we wanted to build, again, credibility in this community. Now people come to us because over time mm-hmm. they've seen that it's actually true. We do maintain the places. We do go in and make sure that the people are safe, secure, and have the things that they need to try and be successful. And to be honest, some people will end up getting jobs. Some people go back to school. Some people will just be housed, and that's a success, mm-hmm. very much a success. And we've had a lot of success already. We have had experience, like with Everhart Village. We have some houses that actually have people with serious mental illness in them. And so we have programs. So we know we've learned a lot about that particular population. I know I've been approached by two different chiefs of police saying, please, Bob, even if you get three people off the street, you know how much that saves our community?
Yes.
No longer, you know, having the police department, the fire department, the jail, the courts, on and on, and the hospital involved. So we know the success. So again, we have all of these programs, and we've been very successful. Now we're starting to buy and either renovate, rebuild. So we realize that a forever home in someone's mind that is a master lease is not a forever home. So we are starting to build our capacity by ownership.
How many houses do you have under lease at the moment versus the ones that you've started?
Well, I think it's about 76 or 77 houses that we have.
Yeah.
We have, I think, 9 that we own, including we've got an incredible deal on our own house, our own facility for our office, our administrative office, which was an amazing deal. So we also are purchasing that and paying for it. It ended up being less than we were paying for rent, and at one point we'll own it.
Where is that?
Stonehenge, Stonebridge facility down off the Esplanade. And so we own that particular building. Again, we found that it was much less expensive to own rather than to lease. So, and those houses anywhere from 8 bedrooms to a studio. Most of them are 3-4 bedroom houses. So it's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have other programs that, again, you can talk about that with fire victims. So, you know, we're still working with that. We've gotten some grants for that because it's so important with people in that kind of trauma, that PTSD. So we're working with them as well. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. But I want you to talk.
Okay, well, let's.
you're referring to the CHAMP program for the
CHAMP program,
survivors.
Right.
And at this point, gosh, I think that they've housed over 200 and something.
That's
people.
Right, almost 250 people, right?
Yeah.
And these would be in the lease houses?
This is a little bit different program. Yeah.
Okay.
So that program is a landlord incentive program. So we go out and find landlords that are willing to rent to the individuals that are coming from Camp Fire still.
So they sign the lease?
Yeah, so they sign the lease on their own. And then we offer case management to follow them for 18 months with that program.
Mm-hmm. And we give them some other incentives, right? We give them a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
So like $500, and say this is an incentive for you to actually lease to these people rather than us master leasing it, because they've been in trauma, they need a place. And so it's been very successful. A lot of people in that program as well as our other programs.
And that program also sets aside funding in case any damages are done in the property. And so that is also covered under this program.
I think that's about another $4,000 is set aside for each home. $4,000 is set aside to ensure that if something does happen, that we can help that landlord who's willing to sign the lease rather than us signing it as an incentive. And we've been really successful with that.
And we're always looking for new landlords that are interested in working with us in any of our programs. And so going back to the other programs, the one Bob was mainly referring to with the master leasing is called our Housing Now program. And that is the one that does the majority of taking people and putting them in roommate situations, sometimes families, but for the most part, it's a 4-bedroom place, and we will take 4 individuals that don't know each other and place them in housing, and then provide support with both volunteers and our case managers to work out any issues that may happen within that household. And then we also have a program called Hush that's meant for housing families. And that program is considered a rapid rehousing program, which means we have 18 months to move families through our program into their own housing. And then we have 2 houses that are meant for individuals that have more of a serious mental illness. One program's called Harmony House, and the other is called Wildflower. Wildflower being our newest. Harmony House we've had around for a while. So with chat housing, we call the houses by the number that we got the houses. And so Harmony House was chat 3. So it's been around for a while and been super successful at keeping 8 individuals in that housing for the majority of the time that it's been operating. It's been the same residents. And then we just started Wildflower, which is 12. It's a triplex, so we have 12 individuals in that housing.
It's all 4 bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes with its own case management.
Actually, we have 3 on 4th Avenue.
Yeah.
We have 3 of them.
It changes so rapidly.
Well, that was a donation to us to run it for 25 years from Behavioral Health. So we didn't pay for it. We paid a dollar for it, actually. But it belongs to us after 25 years. But our commitment is to keep people with mental illness in that home. And it's a two-bedroom, so we do that. So we have three of them, actually.
Mm-hmm. We've also found, though, that it's helpful to have houses that kind of match with different programs out in the area. And so we have houses that are just for vets. And so that way we're able to bring in like Nation's Finest or the VA and come in and kind of help out with the case management or just anything those individuals may need. We also have what we call mercy houses, which are houses for individuals that have some kind of physical disability ailment, because there's lots of individuals on the streets right now that are in that older population that need the more nursing kind of support. And this is a partnership with churches. And do you remember the name of the churches?
Grace Lutheran. We've actually now worked with a couple of different churches that have joined that program because we have three. Excuse me, three houses. It's been a great program because sometimes somebody may have, and we found them, cancer. And they're trying to make appointments, trying to get chemo. So we thought, you know, we should have them. Again, you find a problem, you look for a solution. So we thought, well, let's start a mercy program and connect with the churches and see if we can't make something happen that way. So actually, and that's another thing that we're trying to get the Veterans Administration, if I may, to purchase a house for us because we just had a three-bedroom that we've had for a while with veterans in it. Their forever home. Well, it turns out it's not forever because it's up for sale. So I'm trying to convince the veterans to come up with the money to purchase a house, maybe a four or five bedroom house, so that we can make sure that those veterans don't have to end up moving again or on the street or anything else. So any veterans out there, if you have any power, get a hold of me. We want you guys to raise the money with some of the veterans organizations to help us buy a house for veterans.
What's the age range of the veterans? Are they primarily vets?
Vietnam
vets?
We don't have any. We have some very senior veterans to Vietnam veterans too.
So these are folks who've likely been Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I've seen as young as 22 to as old as 70-something in our houses. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of neat to see, especially within their vet houses, it's kind of neat to see the way some of the older vets will automatically start taking care of those younger vets. Mm-hmm. So it's something that's kind of taught within being in the military.
Absolutely.
Is to take care of each other. And so it's just...
Military.
You're military?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I did want to add in one of the last newest programs that I've been working on is actually a partnership with Sixth Street. And so working on opening a house for youth. So that would be your 18 to 24-year-old population. Once again, we have all these subpopulations that are out there. We have people with serious mental illnesses. We have elderly people on the street that need housing. But we also have really young individuals that need housing that have come from families that just... where it was complete chaos, where they're coming out of foster care, in some cases, it's still from the campfire, where the family just no longer has the needs to take care of them. Mm-hmm. And so we see a lot of young individuals on our streets also.
And I think part of that program, to me, that's exciting, we had a place, actually, a big six-bedroom house, and the owner decided to sell it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I just brought up the Redwood program. We didn't mention the Redwood program
there
as well.
Oh, okay. And you can mention it.
Yeah.
You can mention it, yes. So the exciting part about that is, and things we've learned with the youth, is that they really don't fit in with older people. The trauma is there. So we're looking at getting them inside because of that trauma, number one. Then number two, maybe, because we have some money for it, maybe give them a year of not having to pay rent while we work with them, job training, other things, trying to get jobs, finding places in the community to hire them. So it's a program in progress being built that we hope is going to become successful.
Okay. I wonder if I could... okay, go ahead, Caitlin.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to mention the Redwood program, a collaboration with Chico State. We know that around 1 in 10 college students are unhoused, and so mm-hmm. CHAT has been collaborating with students with the Basic Needs Foundation at Chico State, and it sounds like it's been pretty successful.
Yeah, yes. The last 2 years, we're almost at 16 individuals that we've housed through that program.
Yeah, and, you know, one out of six are food challenged.
Yes.
So that's another thing. Another program we have is we have a food distribution program. We get so much food donated to us that actually we give some to Chico State mm-hmm. to help that program because we have so much for our program, which is really exciting. And then if you want to talk about our warehouse, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Who's donating the food? I have to keep jumping in. There's so much going on.
We have different, there's the blue bag program. So every 2 months we get an unbelievable number of bags of food, dry goods, canned goods. And then the local food bank gives us money. Yeah. We get a tremendous amount from, the grocery store. Total blank.
Oh, Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's gives a blank. Every Saturday.
Unbelievable amount
of food. They give us bakeries, give us bread. So we've grown exponentially enough that we give to others. And then we have a warehouse program where we get donations of furniture, everything you can possibly imagine. So when someone is burned out, someone is living on the street, someone has lost everything in a fire, we have everything to rehouse them, which is really exciting as well.
One of my most favorite things to do within this organization is when I find out somebody's getting housed for the first time, is being able to go there and see them walk through the doors and be able to like look around. It is not an empty space. Mm-hmm. So it's a space that we've already kind of created that home feel too. So they have the furniture they need. They have dishes that they need. They can make a meal that day if they want to.
And to see, and we've actually some of this on video, to see a young kid walk through that door not knowing why they're there and to realize that they're moving inside from outside is tearjerker. It's just unbelievable. The joy and the excitement that a kid will have to realize, I'm in a house. I have some place to live other than where I was living. So that's incredibly exciting as well. And so, we have all of these programs I'm sure we'll end up with more, like we're talking about the youth right now. There's more out there. When we discover it, we'll look for a solution for it. And that's what CHAT does, and I think that's why CHAT has been successful. We don't monologue, we dialogue. You have a problem, we look for a solution. And that's always been what we've always, from the very beginning, that's been our goal, is let's look for a solution if we see a problem. And, I think the community is aware we're not by any stretch perfect, but the community knows that our heart's there and we work really, really hard to find those solutions and get people housed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm going to play a little bit of music, then I'm going to ask you to tell some stories.
Oh, I love stories.
Evolution, well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?
You know it's gonna be
for people with minds that hate. All I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. All right. All right.
You tell me it's the institution. Well, you know, you better free your mind instead. But if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow.
This is The Real Issue on KZFR. I'm Stephen Schutte, sitting in for Sue Hildebrand. This is a wonderful program. Sue set it up and then had a little bit of an illness and wasn't able to be here. So it's my pleasure to be sitting in and talking to these amazing people about chat and the Everhart Village. I mentioned stories. Maybe you could kind of make it a level more specific. Tell us about one or more of these success stories, or you could talk about a failure if you want to, though we're not fishing for failure.
Sometimes they go together.
Yes, right.
Sometimes they go together. I just want a quick shout out for me to the staff. It's just amazing because, you know, Leslie and I have started other nonprofits and also been involved with the Peace Center for 36 years, mm-hmm. and we started two other nonprofits. And, you know, 3 to 4 years later, they've gone away. So we're aware that, you know, sometimes when founders leave, things change. And this group, there's no way this group is not going to be successful. That's amazing what has happened, the dedication, the love, the hours put in. So we're excited about that. And Leslie and I are going to be retiring. I'll be 80 next year. And not that we won't be totally involved on some level, especially fundraising and some house building stuff that we're involved in.
I would guess your retirement may be phased in or out. It's going to take a long time for you.
Yeah, I think so.
There's still going to be a lot of phone calls.
I get them in Belize. I don't get away. Yeah. But anyway, I don't know if you want to share a story. One of those I just did, you could certainly talk about one of them, either one of you.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, this is Amber.
Yes, Amber. So, well, there's many, many, many stories that we have had over the years, amazing stories. Three that to me are, that I was really close to each one of those. I mentioned earlier about a young man who graduated from school and now is working at the Frandesco Hotel. But that family was in here in this radio show. They failed. We put them in three different houses, and two of us in chat saw something in them. People were saying, no, back to the street. And we said, no, there's something there. We don't know what it is. In all the adversity they're going through, they stay together. And that's something. You know, they don't fight. They don't, you know, we see all the, you know, we see all this stuff on the street. We see it when people are failing. They stay together. Now they are both working full time. He's going to school to get his bachelor's degree, and the son has graduated and has a full time job and is going to be going to school. And that took three different houses, two of them trashed, to be honest with you, that we had to work with. It doesn't always work this way, but knowing in our hearts that had some glue that was keeping them together and deserved some chances, because we saw the passion, the compassion, the care, the love, but they kept failing, and it took some time. We had another young man who literally couldn't talk to anyone. He would stand sideways. He was so overwhelmingly shy and had trauma in his life, but really, really smart. And we got him into housing. We worked with him. He started talking. He started laughing. We started working with him. Then he had a really severe accident that for quite a while disabled him. But he still graduated with his bachelor's degree. He still has a teaching credential. He's a super bright kid. And again, staying with something like that with him and working through those things changed his life, and it certainly changes mm-hmm. our lives as well, because it gives you hope, you know. And then we had a young woman with a 9-year-old girl living in the street, and her vehicle took the back seat out of her vehicle so they could sleep in it because of domestic violence. We got her housed. She finished her bachelor's, got her master's, and now going on to a PhD program, and all of that. I mean, she was taking showers with her daughter at the university, living in her vehicle, eating out of the vehicle. Unbelievable. But given an opportunity, she's a brilliant young woman who may have failed. We can't say. She was, you know, she's obviously had some glue that was keeping them together and deserved some chances. Because we saw the passion, the compassion, the care, the love, but they kept failing, and it took some time. We had another young man who literally couldn't talk to anyone. He would stand sideways. He was so overwhelmingly shy and had trauma in his life, but really, really smart. And we got him into housing. We worked with him. He started talking. He started laughing. We started working with him. Then he had a really severe accident that for quite a while disabled him. But he still graduated with his bachelor's degree. He still has a teaching credential. He's a super bright kid. And again, staying with something like that, with him and working through those things, changed his life. And it certainly changes mm-hmm. our lives as well, because it gives mm-hmm. you hope, you know. And then we had a young woman with a 9-year-old girl living in the street, and her vehicle took the back seat out of her vehicle so they could sleep in it because of domestic violence. We got her housed. She finished her bachelor's, got her master's, and now going on to a PhD program and all of that. I mean, she was taking showers with her daughter at the university, living in her vehicle, eating out of the vehicle. Unbelievable. But given an opportunity, she's a brilliant young woman who may have failed. We can't say. She was, you know, she's obviously was a motivated person, but Chat housed her. And I think that made a dramatic difference. Yeah. And she was one of the people, honestly, said, okay, you've housed me. I'm smart. I don't really need you guys around. We did interact, but she was together, but her life had fallen apart. So mm-hmm. we gave her an opportunity to get her life back together. And so those are three quick stories. And again, you know, I go on and on about people that we've brought in with cancer that we've given the last phase of their life, and we've surrounded them with love, with care, right to the day they die. And that we have another house, actually our chat too. We had a person in there with cancer. They discovered cancer, and the people in the house, it's a 5-bedroom house, said, no, we don't want him to go anywhere. We're going to take care of him. And that house took care of him until the day before he passed away, including shots, including cleaning him up, including feeding. Because what we do in a lot of these houses, what we try and do is we try and match people up, and we want them to create a family, because so many people have lost family. So we help them create a family. So they became family for this gentleman, and helped him pass with love. And that's always, you know, much better than being on the street and passing with pain.
Mm-hmm. That was the story that I was
Do you have another one? If not, I can ask the story I mentioned at the break. I would like to hear a story about how you spend your day.
My days are busy.
Are they uniform?
No.
Just the opposite, actually.
Yeah, pretty much.
So chaotic.
What I do within the organization is I kind of oversee a lot of the various programs. And so I spend a lot of time supporting the case managers and the volunteers that are going into the houses and creating these family-like relationships within the houses. But that also means that I'm also the person that gets to hear all the difficult things and a lot of the good things that are happening as well. So my days will be anything from, you know, one side of Chico, something's going on and we need to jump in and make sure that that person is going to be able to stay housed successfully by helping them get their paperwork together to get the funding that they need, to helping them get their Social Security paperwork in, their Section 8 paperwork in, to, you know, there's there's two neighbors that aren't getting along, and we need to go have a conversation with them, mm-hmm. to walking into a situation where somebody does have a serious mental illness and they are having, needing some extra support with that. And mm-hmm. so one of my jobs is to, I show up during those time periods, and really just spend as much time as it takes to really help that person calm down if that's what's needed, or just kind of de-escalate the situation to the mm-hmm. best of my ability. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm all over the place.
Caitlin, your day.
Yeah, as someone brand new to CHAD, actually, as the program manager for Everhart Village, I'm doing a lot of the back work, right? Creating yeah. the policies and mm-hmm. the procedures for this brand new program, and working on creating community partnerships in order to serve the villagers once the Everhart Village is up and running. And so, yeah, a lot of the back work.
Mm-hmm. Tell us again about the partnerships that you're trying to cultivate.
Well, I'm hoping to, right?
Well, of course. And you don't, in that case, don't have to name names, but
yeah,
absolutely.
The
range of partnerships that will be necessary to make it work for you.
Yeah. So, of course, we have Butte County Behavioral Health. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. that's our main partnership right. and our referral source, right? As well as the individuals who are going to be providing that mental health aspect for our villagers. Mm-hmm. But there are other community organizations that we're hoping to partner with that are nearby our location. One of which I did want to mention, the Iverson Center, right? They're mm-hmm. really focused on providing classes for a whole range yes. of mm-hmm. of aspects for individuals. And so we're hoping to work with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have experiences that we share with other organizations, like the Jesus Center right now, the Pellet Shelter. They're going to have some experiences with that mm-hmm. they can share with us. So we have to collaborate. We have to share. So I'm sure that that'll happen. We have those relationships. We just have to expand them to include Everhart Village, which is it's an innovative program. What happened with it? You did talk some about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Innovative program. Mm-hmm. And that helped Behavioral Health get a substantial amount of money. So we worked on this. Actually, we were working on it pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic happened.
Yes.
This yeah. would be probably already on the ground and working. Mm-hmm. So we have collaborated with the police department because we know that we want
to partner with that are nearby our location. One of which I did want to mention, the Iverson Center, right? They're mm-hmm. really focused on providing classes for a whole range yes. of mm-hmm. of aspects for individuals. And so we're hoping to work with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have experiences that we share with other organizations, like the Jesus Center right now, the Pellet Shelter. They're going to have some experiences with that mm-hmm. they can share with us. So we have to collaborate. We have to share. So I'm sure that that'll happen. We have those relationships. We just have to expand them to include Everhart Village, which is it's an innovative program. What happened with it? You did talk some about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Innovative program. Mm-hmm. And that helped Behavioral Health get a substantial amount of money. So we worked on this. Actually, we were working on it pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic happened.
Yes.
This yeah. would be probably already on the ground and working. So we have collaborated with the police department because we know that we want to have the police respond in a certain way, and we can help guide that. I was out the other day talking about stories. I was out just before I left. I got a call about someone in a motel who was acting out. And I got there, and there were two police officers there. There were two people from Behavioral Health, because that's one of the things I do, like you do. I get called out sometimes when there's, something happening. And it was de-escalating. I mean, it was,
We had to cut that interview a little bit short, fade Bob Trausch out in the middle of a story that we'd like to hear the end of. That was because the program ran long last week on Sue Hildebrand's show, and so the last little bit was cut off. But you've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. We appreciate your listening to us. We're going to... Susan has something to say here. Thanks for listening.
You are the new day. For Tucker that this night might stay yesterday. Thoughts that we as humans know could slow worlds and end it all. You are the new day. You are the new day. I will love you more than me and more than yesterday. If you can but prove to me you are the new day. Send the sun in time for dawn. Let the birds all hail the morning. Love of life will urge me say, you are the new day. When I lay me down at night, knowing we must pay this night might stay yesterday. Thoughts that we as humans know could slow worlds and end it all. Lie around me where they fall before the new day.
Up next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothes and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years and is located at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. More information by calling the Cotton Party at 893-4923 and by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and by appointment. More information by calling them at 898-9525. Today on North State Give and Take, I am going to interview Amber Benedict and Teresa O'Connor from CHAT, which is the Chico Housing Action Team. And the Chico Housing Action Team, that you may or may not know, was a small, at the beginning, all-volunteer organization that helped house homeless people here in Chico. And now it's grown into quite an organization. And both Teresa and Amber play a big part. So let's hear, first of all, Teresa, now what is your part with CHAT?